Do we have a Redonda plan?
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi jana balava giribar dhari. Gopi jana balava giribar dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Balava Giridhara Dhari. Gopi Jana Balava Giridhar Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari.
Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. Alright. Hare Krishna.
I hope you're not shaking.
I am a little bit, but
just
let me get adjusted here. Okay.
Hare Krishna. Brahmananda Prabhu was supposed to be speaking tonight. Apparently he's a little indisposed. And so I was given a last minute request to fill in for him in his very large footsteps. So I'll do my best. I believe that he was going to be speaking on Srila Prabhupada's fearlessness. So, one of the aspects of being fearless, of course, was Prabhupada's going out at the age of 70, all on his own, to a country he'd never been out of India before, and consequently traveling all around the world at least a dozen times, spreading Krishna consciousness, despite so many different bodily frailties that he had to face, because we all know that he began with two heart attacks on the boat even before he got to America, and as he got older, and of course as he literally wore his body out in Krishna's service, traveling and struggling to present Krishna consciousness as much as he could, then various other elements began to manifest. So by the time I joined Srila Prabhupada's party, of course I came in right at the end, almost. I joined his party in November of 1975 in New Delhi, and it was here in Vrindavan on December the 2nd, 75, that I was made his full-time servant. So I traveled with Prabhupada for a year and a half, and I saw all the difficulties that he had to face, physical difficulties, in order to be able to preach Krishna consciousness as far and as wide as possible. So I thought I'd relate a few incidences just, you know, from the actual travels. One of Prabhupada's pet comparisons was given when we were in New Vrindavan in 1976, and we were driving out for a morning walk. And as we went down the country road, some dogs came to the side of the road, and as they do, you know, they like to challenge the motor cars and bark. So these dogs started barking like anything at the car as it went past. Of course, you know, we were in the car and there was nothing that the dogs could do, it was just noise. But the dogs like to do that. So as we went past them, Prabhupada turned around and grinned and he said, "Oh, immigration department." Because he'd had so many problems or incidences with, you know, immigration officials, and he always liked to compare them to barking dogs, just making a lot of noise and unnecessarily causing some disturbance. So we had a few incidences with immigration officials. The first one was, because we had, Prabhupada in 1976, he had his last world tour, and we set off from Bombay on April the 18th, early in the morning on 1976, and our first stopover was to be Melbourne, Australia. So the way the ticket was arranged, we had to go to Singapore first, and then spend about 4 hours in transit, and then go on an overnight flight into Australia. So it's quite a long trip. Altogether, I think it was 22 hours before we got to Melbourne. And so we set off early in the morning from Juhu Beach. One little incident that perfectly illustrates how precise Srila Prabhupada was in his management was that on the 17th of April, the afternoon before, Prabhupada had been giving his final darshan on the roof there of his old quarters, because you can't see those quarters anymore, they were demolished. But at the back of Hare Krishna land there was a three-story apartment building. Prabhupada had the top floor, And sometimes he would give a darshan on the roof there. It was very pleasant, just about level with the tops of the palm trees. And Prabhupada would like to sit out there in the afternoons for an hour or two and give darshan. So this particular afternoon, he'd given his darshan. Some gentleman had come and somebody had put a 10 rupee note at his feet, at his seat. And so when Prabhupada got up to go back down into his quarters, I gathered up his paraphernalia, his a cup for drinking water and his glasses and the 10 rupee note. And because the intention was to give him the 10 rupees when we got back in his room. So I was wearing like a waistcoat, sleeveless waistcoat. So I, just for safekeeping, I put the 10 rupees in the pocket. Then we went down and, you know, we were very busy actually getting prepared for the next morning, an early morning departure. And I just completely forgot about the 10 rupees. Anyway, so the next morning we were up at 3. Prabhupada took his massage at about 4:30. I had to pack his suitcase, pack my own suitcase. I'd never traveled overseas with Prabhupada before. His secretary was Pushta Krishnaswamy. He had never traveled with Prabhupada overseas before either. And so, you know, it was a bit of an adventure for us. And by 7 o'clock, we were scheduled to leave for the airport. So I got everything ready. I had all the Prabhupada's cases packed. My case was packed. And the last thing that we did was when Prabhupada got up to leave the present temple and go on a trip to the next one, as he walked out the door, the servant would scoop up whatever paraphernalia there was there on his desk. So he had a certain amount of stuff that he would use every day on his desk for his translation work or, you know, just in the course of the day. And that stuff would go into Prabhupada's red attaché case. He had like a soft back attaché case. So that was the last items that we would gather up and throw into the case as Prabhupada was walking out the door. And of course the trick was that when you arrived in the next place, we would run into the room and whip out all the stuff that was in the attaché case and put it on Prabhupada's desk so that when he came in and sat down, it was exactly as it was when he left the previous place. So he didn't have to wait for anything. So I went in at 7 o'clock and Prabhupada was sitting there. He was waiting and he said, "So, ready?" So I said, "Yes, Srila Prabhupada, everything's ready." So he said, "So, you have something?" And I thought, "I have something." I couldn't figure out what he was referring to, and he was looking at my pocket, in my waistcoat pocket, and he was saying, "You have something?" And then I remembered I had put the 10 rupees in my waistcoat the previous evening after the darshan and forgotten all about it. So I pulled it out proper. I said, "Yes, very good." And then he called Giriraj, who was a brahmachari at that time. He was the temple president. And he said, "Now here's 10 rupees. You put it in such and such an account." That business done, then we were off. So that was very typical of Srila Prabhupada. Every last paisa, he didn't forget anything. And so we headed off. We took with us a tiffin box filled up with various kinds of prasadam for the trip. And the flight to Singapore was pretty good. Prabhupada always traveled first class, and so did his servant. Whoever else was on the party, then they would be given economy class tickets. But Prabhupada and his servant would always get first class tickets. That would give him a little bit more room to spread out. Of course, first class in those days was not like it is nowadays, where they supply, you know, fully reclining beds where you can just stretch out and get a good night's sleep. And in fact, there were some disadvantages to the first class because, you know, they were double and the central dividing arm didn't fold up. It was solid. So you basically had a wider seat, but you couldn't stretch out across the seats because the dividers were solid. So the first class wasn't that first class. Anyway, it was a DC-10. No, that was second part of the trip. Anyway, so we had these first class tickets, and we arrived in Singapore. Anybody that goes through Singapore nowadays, they have that Changi Airport. It's been voted the best airport in the world several times. It's like, you know, a four or five star hotel practically, and all the amenities are there. But in those days, the Singapore airport was actually, I think, a converted military airport, and they were, you know, doubling it up for visitors. So Singapore had not yet kind of developed fully its tourist industry. And so when we arrived, we were supposed to be in 4 hours transit, and the way the airport was set up, the first class lounge where we were expecting to be able to sit for the 4 hours was actually, it was inside the airport, but beyond the immigration control. It was very unusual. You actually had to enter the country through the immigration to be able to use the first class lounge. So, of course, when we walked up to the counter, then the man saw, these are Hare Krishnas, you know, we're in our robes. So he said, no, you can't enter, you're banned. So some years before, the devotees had been to Singapore and they tried to do some Hare Nam without getting permission from the police, and it resulted with the Hare Krishnas being banned from Singapore. And even now, if you go in robes, they won't let you in. They'll actually stamp your passport, not allowed. So, you know, Prabhupada was standing there, Pushtakrishna went up, they wouldn't let us in. So then he was arguing, Pushtakrishna was arguing with them that, well, look, we've got 4 hours transit, so we're not going anywhere, we're staying at the airport, and there's nowhere for us to sit. There was not even any seating on that side of the immigration. There was no transit hall or anything. So he said, we're entitled to use the first class lounge, so you have to let us in. So like this, he argued with them for about 10 minutes, and then finally they conceded, all right, you're entitled. So they did actually stamp us into Singapore. So then they led us to the first class lounge, and it turned out to be a pub. Fortunately, when we first arrived, it wasn't open, so they opened it just for us, and then we sat down in this pub for about an hour. Probably that may have been the first and only time that Prabhupada ever went to a pub. And so, you know, we had lunch. We had the tiffin there, so we had a nice lunch. And then just as we're finishing our lunch, the pub opened. And all the, you know, passengers started coming in, and they started smoking and drinking, and so we couldn't stay in there. So then we had to go out and then sit in, you know, this kind of small holding area. And again, you know, it was an old airport. The seating that they had were these molded plastic bucket seats, very uncomfortable. Most of them were kind of wonky or broken, but we had no choice. So we had to just sit there for about 4 hours. Then there was a delay with the departure of our aircraft, another 3 hours. So we ended up, you know, sitting there for about 7 hours. It was really a trial. Anyway, so finally we got on the plane. It was a DC-10. And we flew to Australia. So that was overnight. So during the night flight, Prabhupada wanted to lay down. And we're in the DC-10s, the first class section was right in the nose of the aircraft, right as far forward as you could go. And we had the first two seats. So with these double seats and with the arms that didn't fold back, there was nowhere to lay down. So Prabhupada had to, I escorted Prabhupada into the economy section, and we were able to find a row of three seats that was empty. And so then Prabhupada laid down across those in the economy. And I went back into the first class. So then after about an hour, then Prabhupada came, he got up and he came back into his first class seat there. So by this time, the movie was showing. And again, you know, the old entertainment systems consisted of one screen at the front of the section that they pulled down, and then they projected onto that screen, and everybody in the cabin watched the one screen. So because we were in the first class in the first row, the screen was right in front of us. There was no escaping it. It was just there, you know. And I remember it was a war movie starring David Niven. David Niven was a popular movie star from the 50s and 60s. And when Prabhupada came back in and sat down, it was just reaching its climax in the movie. And so David Niven's side, they were storming this hill, and the enemy were firing at them and throwing bombs. So as they're running up the hill, he's shooting his revolver, and then he gets blown up. So, you know, he gets blown up, he falls down, then he jumps up and he runs back and he keeps on going. Then somebody shoots him, and then he goes down again, and then he jumps up again and he runs forward again. And then there's, you know, a third time he gets blown up, and then he jumps up again. And then Prabhupada was sitting there watching. And on the third time that he got blown up, he turned around and he looked at me, he said, "Still alive?" It was very funny. Because we didn't have any of the soundtrack, we just saw the picture. So you could see how false the whole thing was, but Prabhupada just thought it was so amusing. Still alive? After that, then, of course, he just took out his beads and chanted. So that, you know, it was a long trip. We had to fly to Sydney first, and we were an hour in transit in Sydney Airport. Fortunately, the Sydney Temple president, Jayadharma, he had brought some fresh fruit into the transit lounge. And again, they had a strange system there, that the international flight would come in, and then domestic passengers could join the same flight. So the domestic passengers that were joining our flight were all in the same transit lounge as the international passengers. So although we didn't go through immigration, people that were on the domestic leg could actually mingle with us. So Jayadharma came in with this big silver platter with, you know, some nice cut fruit, and Prabhupada took a little of that, and then he and another devotee, they went around and they distributed all the other fruit to the other passengers. So that was nice. But there was one unexpected advantage that it put me at. I had some Ayurvedic medicine, and I had some packets of crushed neem leaves that I was carrying in my bag. And of course, in Australia, they're very fanatic about not allowing seeds or food or leaves or flowers or anything from overseas into their country. And in fact, nowadays you can get fined about $2,000 if they find anything in your bag that you haven't declared. Gene, that's what I was saying. So I actually discovered a way of beating the customs. Jayadharma was there, and then he explained that when we arrive in Melbourne, the domestic passengers would just go through the regular terminal, and then the international passengers, of course, we would have to go through immigration and customs. So I just handed all my contraband stuff to Jayadharma, and when we landed in Melbourne, he just walked through with it because he was a domestic passenger. And we went through, you know, the regular international check-in. So we had an hour's transit, then it was about an hour and 10 minutes flight to Melbourne. And then when we got to Melbourne, and I mentioned we'd been traveling by that time for about 22 hours. So, you know, we were really tired. And we came through the immigration with no problem. But when we were arriving, they had given us one of these landing cards. And you had to fill it in, you know, your name and passport. and all your arrival information. And then at the bottom, it said, you know, you have to declare how many suitcases that you have and how many carry-ons you have. So we had no experience, and so when we got the landing cards, we filled it in for Srila Prabhupada, and I put on the bottom of his landing card that he had one suitcase. So going through immigration, not a problem. But then we were standing at the luggage carousels waiting for the suitcases to come over. So Pushtakrishna, he said, well, you go through with Srila Prabhupada, and I'll wait here and bring the bags. So, okay, that's a good idea, and then Prabhupada doesn't have to wait. So we approached the customs counter, and then the man asked for the form. So then he saw on Prabhupada's form it said one suitcase. So he said, no, you haven't got your suitcase, you can't go through. Australians can be really bureaucratic sometimes, especially in the airports. So I tried to persuade him that, look, you know, the suitcase is there, this is his secretary, we're traveling with him, you know, we'll take care of the case, just let him through. Nope, hasn't got his suitcase. So I said, look, you know, he's an old man, he's 80 years old, we've been traveling for over 20 hours, there's no seats to sit on, and the baggage still hasn't come off. Please just let him go through. I personally packed his suitcase anyway, so I know what's in it. I'm his servant. So I'll bring the suitcase through, but just let him through. Nope, hasn't got his suitcase, can't come through. So I got, you know, a little hot. I'm a bit of a hothead sometimes. People know that, but so I started getting a bit heated, and I got in an argument with the man, and I was insisting, you know, you have to let him through, there's no reason why not. So by this time, a crowd had gathered around us, the other passengers, to see what was going on. And Srila Prabhupada just very quietly slipped off to the side. And he didn't say anything to stop me, but, you know, he just moved away from where the commotion was going on. Just, you know, just stood there very quietly, not saying anything. So then I realized if this gets much more heated, I'm going to probably get arrested or something. So I cooled off. I had to. And the customs got, you know, we had to pull back and wait for the suitcase. So I was standing there fuming for about a couple of minutes. And then all of a sudden this policeman comes. And he walks up to me and he said, what was that all about? So I wasn't sure exactly what his purpose was. I might be in trouble or something. So, but then I explained that all we want is for him to go through. We have his bags, you know, we'll be accountable for them. So then he said, will all that stop if he goes through? So that was this huge kirtan that was going on the other side of the arrival doors. So Guru Kripa, Swami at that time, and all the Melbourne and Australian devotees that were there in the arrival hall, and they were having this Wampa Stompa kirtan. And it was so loud, it was drowning out all the announcements, so nobody could tell what was going on. And when we first arrived in the hall there, we could hear this kirtan, and whenever somebody left the customs hall, the doors would open, and you know, they were going to the arrival area. So whenever the doors opened, the kirtan became really loud, and then the doors closed, and then it would recede. So after a minute, Prabhupada turned to me, he said, this is our men? He said, this is our men? As if it could have been anybody else. But it was very heartening, you know, to hear the kirtan going on. But for the airport police, it was a real disturbance. And they tried moving the devotees down the far end of the arrival hall, but it was still so loud, it was just drowning everything out. So this policeman, then when he came up to me, he said, so if he goes through, will all that stop? So I realized, okay, yeah. So I said, yes, definitely. Because I had no idea whether it would or not, but I said, yes, definitely. So The policeman goes over to the customs guy, and in 30 seconds, Prabhupada was through. So that was nice. And of course, as soon as Prabhupada appeared at the door, then the kirtan got even louder. And then it, you know, kind of hit a crescendo, and then suddenly it stopped. And then apparently they took Srila Prabhupada to the first class lounge, and they'd arranged the press conference there. So of course the devotees were innocent. They hadn't really understood how long we'd been traveling, and Prabhupada was not going to refuse their request for preaching. So he went off to the first class lounge and held court there for a half hour with the press and TV people. In the meantime, me and Pushyakrishna were still in the hall, and there was one last drama. We got Prabhupada's suitcase, and I took it through, and then I thought, oh, you know, I hope I don't get the same guy again. But they actually directed me to another man, and he had seen what had been going on, and he was actually very nice, and he was very respectful. So he said, this will just take a minute, don't worry. We just got to have a quick look in the suitcase, and then you'll be through, you know. So he was trying his best to be very nice. Prabhupada had this large red suitcase, soft, and it had a zipper. So he just, you know, reassured me, just 1 minute, just have a look. He undoes the zip, pops open the lid, and a cockroach about this big, well, you know, one of those giant things that lives in the drains. It suddenly jumped out of Prabhupada's suitcase and landed on the counter. And then that was it. All hell broke loose. The customs guy starts yelling, quarantine, quarantine. And he hit this big red buzzer. There was a light on a pole with a big, you know, button. He smacks the button and the red light starts flashing and the klaxon goes off. And he's yelling, quarantine, quarantine, like this. I thought, oh my God, I'm going to be here for hours. Anyway, in the middle of it, the guy smiles at me and he says, don't worry. And then this quarantine guy comes and he's got two cans, giant cans of bug spray. Right, and he gives them to the customs guy, and the customs guy, he smiles at me, he says, just 1 minute. And then he gets both the cans, and he emptied both cans into Prabhupada's suitcase. And then he shuts the lid down, zips it up, says, have a nice stay in Melbourne. And of course, the bug was an illegal immigrant. And so he was summarily executed on the desktop. The customs guy whapped him and squashed it flat. That was it. So he only had a brief period of being an Australian. And then that was it. So we got through that one. So that was Melbourne. Of course, leaving was very nice. I remember Prabhupada was going down the escalator when we were at the airport on our exit. We were heading out to the boarding area, so we were going down the escalator, and then some of the devotees, to keep up with him, they were running down the up escalator. So Prabhupada was going down and they were running down the up escalator, and Prabhupada was looking and grinning at them. Prabhupada was a little bit outrageous, you know. Anything to encourage the devotees' enthusiasm, he liked that. So from there then we went to various places. We went to New Zealand. That was just for a day and a half. That was nice. There was a big crowd of devotees there that met us. Most of them were not ISKCON devotees. There was a large group of the first breakaway group from ISKCON under Tushyakrishna and Siddhasvarupananda. So they were there at the airport. And as we drove from the airport, it was late at night when we arrived, as we drove from the airport to go to the Auckland Temple, then all these cars were whizzing past and, you know, honking their horns, and devotees were hanging out of the windows, Jai Prabhupada, like this. Prabhupada was looking as we're racing, going down the road there. It was nice. And then from there we went to Fiji. We had a week there. Prabhupada did the inauguration of the new temple in Lautoka. They were already building it, but he did the foundation stone ceremony for that. And he gave initiation to Vasudev Prabhu and his brother, Bull Mohan. I think the memorable thing about Fiji was the food, the prasadam. There were about 20 Gujarati ladies every day that were coming to the house. Vasudev had turned over his whole house for Prabhupada. One day Punjabi? No, they weren't. They were all Gujaratis. Punja, not Punjabi. No, his name was Deoji Punja. They were practically the richest family on the island. They owned all these different shops. They owned the biggest supermarket on the island. And they had seen Prabhupada some years before. They met as devotees. Upendra actually was the first devotee to go to Fiji, I think as early as 1972. And so they had become impressed with Prabhupada and his disciples and decided to build a temple in the island there. And as a side point, one of the difficulties that the local GBC, who was Madhadvisa at that time, faced was that although Deoji was practicing, he was following the principles, he was chanting 16 rounds, he and his brothers owned this supermarket. And of course, a supermarket means you're selling everything under the sun, especially, you know, a lot of meat and alcohol and all these things. So Madhavisa was a bit conflicted whether he should advise Deoji not to sell these things or whether he should just keep quiet. So he brought that question to Srila Prabhupada in January of 76 when we were in Mayapur. So Prabhupada heard it, then he said, no, he said, let him continue. And then he quoted this verse from Bhagavad Gita that every endeavor is covered by some sort of fault. So he said, if he is chanting, then everything will be okay. And in fact, what happened was that in the two or three months between us being in Mayapur and having that conversation, and then at the end of April when we actually arrived in Fiji, Deoji, who became Vasudev, he himself decided that he couldn't tolerate selling all these horrible things anymore in the supermarket. So he actually broke up the family business with his brothers. They paid him out, and then he started some prasadam restaurants and some ice cream parlors. So Prabhupada's confidence was there, you know, that if he's chanting, everything will be all right, and that was fully borne out. Anyway, when we got to Fiji, we were staying in Deoji's house, and one morning I saw Deoji was in this room with Pushtakrishna, who was Prabhupada's secretary, and Guru Kripa, who had just become the new GBC. So they were basically getting on his case a little bit, because he'd arranged these programs for Prabhupada, you know, which involved some travel amongst the islands, at least on the main island, and then apparently there was another program that was going to be held on another island, and it involved an airplane flight, although it was only a half-hour flight, but it meant going to the airport and flying there. So Pushtakrishna, you know, he was new to his duties as Prabhupada's secretary. He felt that the program that they had arranged was going to be too troublesome for Srila Prabhupada. It would be a big inconvenience to travel here and there. So he was telling Deoji that you have to cancel all these different programs. We'll just do the one place in Lautoka, and that'll be it. So I could see that Vasudev was, you know, getting a bit upset because he'd made the arrangements and advertised, and so people were expecting, you know, to see Prabhupada at these places. So when he came out of the room, I saw he was quite disturbed, so I called him over. I said, look, I said, you go straight to Srila Prabhupada and talk to him about it and see what he says. So he did that. And as soon as he, you know, told Prabhupada what the problem was, Prabhupada called in his secretary and his GBC, and then he chastised them mildly. But he said, we are here for the preaching. So Pushta Krishna, he said, but Prabhupada, we just don't want you to be inconvenienced. So Prabhupada said, at my age, just traveling is an inconvenience. So he said, whatever programs that he's arranged, now you do. So that was it. And the programs were back on, except the one that involved the flight. Dayalji agreed to cancel that one, but we did do the other ones. But that was a lesson for Prabhupada's servants. Of course, on one hand, we were there to make sure that Prabhupada wasn't inconvenienced as much as possible, make it, you know, his travels smooth, make sure that he had everything that he needed for his preaching work. And then on the other hand, we knew that just traveling so frequently and so far, you know, was bound to cause a disturbance. And Prabhupada had many different kinds of bodily ailments by that time. He often had this condition, uremia, where the kidneys are not working, so they don't eliminate the uric acid in the body. So his hands and his feet would swell up sometimes like little balloons. And sometimes he would take a half a diuretic pill in order to enable him to pass that excess fluid out. But it's a very, very painful condition. Prabhupada also used to get heart palpitations. That happened fairly frequently. One or two places that we were in, he had it so bad that he couldn't go out on his morning walk. Then toothache, that was another constant. Just before I joined Prabhupada's party, the end of November in 75, he had been on a trip to Mauritius and South Africa and Kenya. So whilst he was in Mauritius, he had a lot of problems with his teeth. And up until that point, Prabhupada had always used neem twigs for cleaning his teeth. He had done that right from, you know, being a small boy. So his whole life he had used these neem twigs. But when he got to Mauritius in 75, his teeth became so sore and loose in his mouth that he could no longer chew the neem twigs so that he could clean them. So he began then from that point to use a regular toothbrush. And he instructed Hari Kesh how to make his own toothpaste, because he didn't buy anything commercial, but he had him make up his own toothpaste formula, because Prabhupada was a pharmacist, so he knew exactly what, you know, chemicals or ingredients needed to be put in there, and he had us make it up. So that was actually, when I joined the party, one of the very first duties that I got was making up a new batch of Prabhupada's toothpaste. So anyway, toothache was a major problem. Prabhupada did in fact lose one of his teeth whilst I was traveling with him. It wasn't lost exactly, it fell out, or he took it out, and I ended up very fortunately getting that from him. I still have that in my room. But very bad swelling in his mouth from his teeth. Prabhupada used to laugh sometimes. He would say, actually, they all want to fall out. He said, but this toothpaste that I have invented is forcing them to stay in. And I remember going up to Prabhupada after lunch, especially here in Vrindavan. He's got his prasadam room there in his quarters. And he would sit at this chonki and eat. Then at the end, he'd ring the bell and I'd come in and clear his plate away. And Prabhupada would sit there for a minute with the toothpicks, and he would, you know, poke out all the prasadam from between his teeth, and as he dislodged it, then he would spit it out onto the table. It was nice, I enjoyed that. Prabhupada would spit out, and then, you know, you would be wiping it up as he was spitting it out on the table. And then he would get up, or sometimes he would take some medicine, Bhaskar Lavan, or Trifala Chorna, depending on what he required, and he would put that powder in his palm of his hand, and then he would put his head back with his mouth open, and he would just throw it in, like that, without touching. And then he would keep his mouth open, and then he would get his glass and then pour some water in and swallow it. And then he'd put the glass down, and then he would go into his bathroom and wash after eating. So the first, I think practically the first day that I was doing that duty of cleaning up, I was watching him as he was poking his teeth with the, you know, the wooden toothpick. And I saw as he pushed the toothpick into his mouth, his teeth were actually moving apart as the toothpick went in there. His teeth were so loose, they were moving apart like this. So toothache was another problem that he had. Flu he got in London, that caused a lot of problems with excess mucus. So Prabhupada's general health was, and he had also very high blood pressure. Later in the year when we were here in Vrindavan for 3 months, he had very high blood pressure. Practically every evening he was asking me to massage his head with Brahmi oil. Brahmi oil is an Ayurvedic medicine. It's used by many students when they're doing their studies. They rub it in their head. It's supposed to be good for your brain. It cools things down. So I was massaging his head with Brahmi oil, and he would put a wet gumshoe on his head to try to bring down the pressure in his brain from the high blood pressure. So that, you know, Prabhupada's general condition was that he was always ill. In fact, he said that in November of 76 we were here, and Prabhupada had been discussing about how to reduce the amount of money that the temple was spending on devotee maintenance. So he was telling them, you don't need toothbrushes, just get the twigs. He said, I was doing that. So don't buy toothpaste or toothbrushes for the devotees. And then he said we don't use doctors. He said, at least I don't. He said, we have no doctor's bills. He said, at least I never go to the doctor. He said, practically I am always ill. But he said, I still never use the doctor. So, as he said that in Fiji, just the act of traveling was an inconvenience. So what to speak about, you know, making all the preaching programs, that was just accepted as part of what you have to, you know, the austerity that you have to do when you're traveling and preaching. So from Fiji, then we went to Hawaii. Again, we had problems there, not Prabhupada so much. We learnt our lesson after going through the scene in Australia. Then, you know, with the landing cards, we marked Srila Prabhupada as not having any luggage, so he was able to go through. Still, Pushta Krishna, he was bringing up the rear and bringing the luggage through. They made him open every suitcase. They took every single item out of his suitcase because he was a Hare Krishna. And apparently, due to some bad relationships with the devotees in Hawaii with the local customs officials, it was a standard routine that any Hare Krishna had to be thoroughly searched before they went through. So Pushta Krishna got the hairdryer on that one. from Hawaii, we had 1 month in Hawaii. And then on June 1st, we flew to Los Angeles. So that was an interesting flight. Again, there was some delay. We were on the plane, and there was some delay, maybe an hour or something. And we were up in the first class. So just to keep the customers happy, the air stewardesses were serving out liquor or champagne. So one or two of them were, you know, knocking it back and getting a little tipsy. So they were all laughing and giggling. And Prabhupada was just sitting there very soberly in his seat. These people behind us were all like half drunk and laughing. And then Prabhupada looked at me, he said, He said, what have they got to laugh about? It's very kind of pointed. What have they got to laugh about? So when we arrived in Los Angeles, I think it was about a four-hour flight. So we arrived late at night. So we landed, and then they pulled up, you know, where the boarding area is. And then we're waiting and waiting, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, nobody's getting off the aircraft. And then they made an announcement. So they said, there's some obstruction. So everybody has to go through, you know, when you leave the aircraft, go through the first door, but don't go through the regular exit. So, okay, so we start filing out with everybody else. And then they said, they stopped us, they said, no, not you. You go through the regular area. So what they hadn't announced was there were about 500 or 600 devotees crowded into the reception area, so nobody else could get in there. So they had to divert all the other people to another area. But, you know, Srila Prabhupada and his party, we went through the regular area. And then there was this huge kirtan that was going on, about 500 or 600 devotees. It was really amazing. And I remember going through, you know, the corridors of the LA airport there, and devotees were just going wild. I mean, they were just bouncing off the walls and the ceiling. It was amazing. And we were going along the moving walkway, and devotees were running along and chanting, you know, and playing the drums and karatals. Prabhupada was grinning from ear to ear, and he put his hand up, Hari Bol, like this, and all the devotees were going wild. It was great. So that was a, you know, a nice reception there. Another little travel pastime. When we left LA, we flew to Detroit. So that was, you know, kind of peaceful. And then all of a sudden, the airplane dropped. And I don't know how far, maybe 10,000 feet or something. But everybody in the airplane, whoa! Like this. And I was sitting there next to Srila Prabhupada. And when it dropped, I immediately went dizzy. And my eyes were starting to spin in my head. And so I just instinctively looked at Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada looked at me and he just grinned like anything. His eyebrows went up. That was all he said. You know, that was his whole reaction. So apparently the plane dropped about 10,000 feet for some reason or another, just very suddenly. Then from there, Detroit, then we went to Toronto. I'd never been to Canada. It was my first trip to America at that time. And I'd never been, of course, to Canada either. So I'd always heard that Canadians were really nice, mellow, you know. I kind of imagined it was something like an extension of America. And so I was quite surprised by the reception that we got from the customs officials. Again, we'd left Pushtakrishna to bring the bags through. And in the arrival area, we went through immigration. That wasn't a problem. And then there was a small counter for customs. And then there was a glass door, and we could see all the devotees on the other side of the door waiting for Prabhupada. So great, you know, it was very nice, very encouraging. And there was this tall customs official, and that's one of his friends with him. And he was looking at us, and I saw he was kind of looking very disdainfully at Srila Prabhupada and at myself, and practically with a sneer on his, you know, on his mouth. He looked at Srila Prabhupada, he said, so this is what they're all waiting for. I mean, he was really nasty. I was really surprised because it was, you know, Canada, supposed to be friendly. He was really, really nasty, very envious person. And he took every single item out of Prabhupada's, you know, attaché case. We had a couple of little boxes of snuff, tin boxes. Prabhupada would use snuff sometimes to relieve his high blood pressure. So we had gotten a couple of unopened snuff containers, boxes, and Prabhupada had told me to seal them with wax so that they wouldn't break open in his case. So I'd done that before we left. So when we got to Canada, this fellow, he took everything out and then he saw these snuff boxes. It was clearly, you know, commercially manufactured snuff. It was printed on there. But he scraped off all the wax and opened them up so that he could see what was inside. So again, it was another, you know, example of customs harassment. Prabhupada didn't say anything. I felt like, you know, getting on the guy's case, but I'd learnt better that you don't get in fights when you're with Srila Prabhupada. So I kept quiet too, but I was fuming. Prabhupada didn't say anything. He just, all right, you know, he tolerated it, and then we got through okay. So that was Toronto. Then the next travel episode, I think when we went to Washington, that was very nice. We arrived there at night time. Well, actually, from Toronto, we flew to Pittsburgh because we were due to go to New Brindaban. So for some reason or another, there was some problem at the Toronto airport. So we actually had to drive down to Buffalo and then fly in to America from Buffalo. I think we went through customs. We must have gone over customs by land. And then we flew down to Pittsburgh there. So in Pittsburgh, because that was interesting, all the inhabitants of New Brindaban, they all came to visit, to greet Srila Prabhupada. And I was watching, they were running around in their dhotis and these big rubber boots and workman's boots. they were like quite a scruffy mob. But it was fun. And, they were all very happy. There was about 40 or 50 of them there to greet Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was very happy to see them. Then there was a 90-minute drive to New Brindaban. Kitnananda was in the back with Srila Prabhupada. He had brought some New Brindaban sweets and some other cooked items, fried things, samosas and things. And so he offered them to Srila Prabhupada. And I was quite surprised, because I thought Prabhupada would just, you know, take a little sample and then say, you know, or keep it or just distribute it, because we're in the car going down the highway. But Prabhupada said, oh, he said, very good. So he had him spread it out on the seat, and Prabhupada sat there, you know, taking a full prasadam on the back seat of the car. It was very nice. And he told Kitnananda one of his new sayings. When we were in Hawaii, we'd been going down for a morning walk to Magic Island, which is like a little promontory, nice grassy area, very flat, right on the seafront. So, I have to go down. Our temple is up in the hills, so you'd have to drive down onto the main highway and then get down to the seafront. So walking along the seafront, of course, just at the side, there was an area where the surfers used to go. So Prabhupada, sometimes he would glance over and watch the surfers catching the waves. He said, I call it suffering, not surfering. So he kind of combined the two words, surfing and suffering. He said, I call it suffering. And on the way back up, by 7 o'clock, then all the people would be coming out to go to work. So the highway was quite busy. Prabhupada was sitting in the back and he was watching all these cars zipping up and down the highway, 70 miles an hour. And then he said, what's the difference? He said, a dog is running on four legs and they are running on four wheels. He said, but what is the difference? So he told him, when we arrived in Pittsburgh, he was going down the highway, he told that to Kitnananda also. So he said, what is the difference? They're going on four wheels, the dog is going on four legs, but otherwise the business is the same. So he said, just try to save them. Yeah. He said, this was my program right from the very beginning. Give a little chanting, a little prasadam, and go home. No philosophy. He said, just let them chant. He said, I started my movement with this determination that I'll give them some chanting, I'll give them nice prasadam, and they'll not come. They must come. He said, I had that determination. So he said, this is all you have to do. Just distribute prasadam and chant Hare Krishna. No talking. Go home. Dance, chant, eat, and go home. Then later on, he said, Chaito Darpa Namarjanam, then you can talk. So like that. So that was New Vrindavan. I already mentioned the morning walk where Prabhupada saw the dogs barking. And now you know why. Immigration department. Then from New Vrindavan, then we flew to Washington. Of course, that was a new property, that Potomac property at that time. And Prabhupada was going there for the 200th anniversary of American independence. We were there for July 4th, and it was the bicentennial. So the devotees had arranged it specifically so Prabhupada could be there for that festival. So when we arrived, it was very nice. We got into the airport maybe about 9:30, 10 o'clock. And Pragosh was there with various other Radha Damodar book distributors. They were out 10 o'clock at night, still selling books. And as we went past a crowd, there was a young soldier that Pragosh had sold either a Bhagavatam or a Chaitanya Charitamrita to. And as he sold this boy the book, he told him, actually, the author is arriving in the airport right now. Would you like to see him? So the boy said, oh, okay. You know, some young army guy, I guess. And so he took him over to where the devotees were, and Prabhupada just arrived. So as we're walking along, this boy saw Srila Prabhupada, so he held up the book. And Prabhupada stopped. He said, Jai, very good. And then he carried on walking. And this boy apparently was so pleased at, you know, having gotten that little 1 second recognition from Srila Prabhupada, he immediately gave Pragosh another $20. So that was great. Again, when we left Washington, the devotees were out selling books, and Pragosh sold on Jayo, I think it was Jayo, he sold a book, a Chaitanya Charitamrita, to a dentist from Toronto. The nicely dressed man. And then again, same thing, he invited him, the author's here, would you like to meet him? So he brought him over. Prabhupada immediately, yes, you come and sit. So he sat next to Prabhupada and they had a 10-minute conversation. The man was holding his Chaitanya Charitamrita. He was really, really happy to meet with Srila Prabhupada. So that was very nice. Now the special feature of Washington was the July 4th celebration. And we weren't really, nothing was really planned for the devotees for that day. But in the afternoon, somebody got the idea of driving down from the hills where Potomac is into the city to see the celebrations. And something like 1 million or 2 million people were expected to go into the capital and crowd into that large mall area. They call it the mall, right? Yeah. And there was going to be this huge fireworks display in the evening. So somebody got the idea, why don't we go down? So they invited Srila Prabhupada, would you like to go and see the fireworks? And, you know, going to the city. So Prabhupada said, all right, yes, let's go. I was quite surprised, but Prabhupada was, you know, willing. So off we went. We went in a convoy of about 10 vehicles. So just in front of us, there was a big van, and there was about 15 devotees sitting in the van. They had the back doors open because the road was jammed up. We were going very, very slowly down, you know, the mountain road into the city, and people were parking at the side of the road because they knew there's going to be a huge traffic jam after the fireworks display, and they'll never be able to get out for hours. So a lot of them were parking up in the hills with the hope that they would see the fireworks from a distance. So the whole road was just, you know, all people partying, they were having picnics, cars were parked, they were all in a very good mood. And I remembered a letter that we'd gotten from Adi Keshava a couple of weeks before from New York. And he had described how they had got this flatbed truck, like an open-back truck, and they were putting a dozen devotees on it every day, and they were just driving around New York City on the back of this open truck doing kirtan. And it was, you know, very, very popular. People loved it. So I remembered about that, and I mentioned it to Srila Prabhupada as we were going down into Washington. So he said, yes, he said, tell them, do kirtan. So we signaled to the truck in front, and then all the devotees started up a kirtan. And as we're going down, you know, people at the side of the road, they could hear the sound of the kirtan. So they were all turning around, hey, Hari, Hari, Krishna, like this. And they're all dancing and waving. It was very, very nice. So Prabhupada was really happy. So we got down into the city. We were driving around, not much traffic. And people were wandering everywhere. There were like hundreds of thousands of people just roaming around all over the streets everywhere. And I saw when we went past one street corner, there was police on every street corner. And as we went past with the kirtan party, one of the policemen, he started dancing, doing a little jig on the corner and waving to us. Prabhupada loved it. And then at one point we were going really slowly through a crowd. There were some young men and they heard the kirtan, so they also started dancing and jumping up and down. And at the same time they had cans of beer and, you know, six packs on their shoulders of beer. And they're all intoxicated, but they're all chanting and jumping up and down and waving. Prabhupada was laughing like anything. And he made an interesting comment after he saw those boys dancing like that. He said, actually, so far I've seen, he said, the Russian people also, they're just like anybody else in the world. He said, they're artificially being suppressed. He said, otherwise everybody wants to sing and dance. So he said, so far I've studied, the Russian people also, they like to sing and dance, but they're being artificially suppressed. He said, but they cannot do that for very long. So it was interesting. It was in the capital of America, and he was thinking about the Russians. And at that time, of course, you know, it was Soviet Russia, Brezhnev and all those guys. And of course, Prabhupada's, I guess you could say it was an indirect prediction. He said that it will not last for very long. So... then from Washington, we went to New York. And then from New York, we flew out to London. Of course, in New York, that was really the culmination of Prabhupada's preaching for the last 10 years. 1976, July the 18th, they had the first New York Rathiatra. So Prabhupada had started there 10 years before, exactly 10 years before. July of 1966, he had formed ISKCON, and now July 1976, he'd come back, and whereas he'd started, you know, with 26 Second Avenue, a tiny little storefront, no money, no followers practically or anything, now 10 years later he was coming back. We have this 11-story building in Midtown Manhattan, wonderful facility, all kinds of things were there, restaurant was there, huge temple that could hold 1,000 people, one floor for guests, one floor for... Yes, I'm just coming to that. there was one or two floors for the brahmacharis, one floor for the brahmacharinis, there was floors for life members, there was another floor that was going to be a complete diorama exhibit. There was another floor where they actually had their own theater. And so they were doing like these, what they call off-Broadway productions. Sudama was there at that time with the Bhakti Rasa Theater Company. They gave a very nice reception for Prabhupada at the airport when we arrived. Rasagya was there. with the other girls, and they had these baskets full of flowers, roses and other flowers. And as Prabhupada was walking through the airport, because there was about 400 devotees that were jammed in there to greet him, and as Prabhupada was walking through the hallway there, the girls were in front and they were dancing very elaborately and throwing flowers everywhere, so that Prabhupada was walking, you know, on this bed of roses as he went through the airport. It was really, really nice. I'm not sure who cleaned the airport up afterwards, but I mean, in those days you could get away with those kinds of things. It's not like now, they, you know, practically strip search you and x-ray you, and you know, you have to take your shoes off and your belt off and your jacket off, and you know, in those days you could, you know, you could go right up to the door of the aeroplane practically if you were greeting somebody. So it was really nice. Prabhupada took full advantage. So anyway, that was, you know, that trip was Prabhupada's last visit to New York. It was really the culmination of 10 years of preaching ISKCON. We had this fabulous Rathiatra. Is there anybody here that was there for that first one? There you go, eyewitnesses. At least 600 devotees came from all over the country and other countries. And Prabhupada advised the devotees, because Jayananda Prabhu was there. He had supervised the construction of 3 Rath carts. Prabhupada was particularly concerned about the wheels. He went out one morning and he questioned them, are the wheels strong? Because apparently the year before they'd had Rathiatra in Philadelphia, and one of the wheels had actually collapsed, and they had to leave the chariot there in the middle of the road. So Prabhupada was very concerned that they build proper wheels for the Rath carts. And then he told Tamal Krishna Maharaj, now he said, you make a big procession, not just the Rath carts, but all the temple vehicles, they can also join in, and the Radha Damodar buses also. So we ended up, they had the 3 Raths, and then they had about 20 vehicles, including 2 or 3 of the Radha Damodar Greyhound buses, all in a big long line, and it stretched over about 3 or 4 city blocks, all the way down Fifth Avenue. Prabhupada said, you know, this is a dream come true. Yeah, he said, this is the most important street in the world. And then, you know, we had full command of it. It was really wonderful. So they'd made the arrangement that they were going to start from, I guess, 55th or higher, go down Fifth Avenue. And then Prabhupada was to join up with the procession at the Empire State Building, which was on 34th Street, I think, yeah? So I remember we were driving parallel, you know, the procession was going down 5th Avenue, and we were driving down, we must have been driving down 7th Avenue, yeah? Because 6th is going the other way. Yeah, so we were going down 2 blocks over, and as we caught up with the parade, as we went over each crossroad, we could look across and then we would see all the devotees. And it was going on for 3 or 4 crossings. So we saw, you know, Balaram's chariot. Then on the next crossing we saw Subhadra's. Oh, the other way around, sorry. Lord Jagannath, then Subhadra, and then finally we saw Lord Balaram's chariot in front. Then we cut over at 34th Street. And the parade had stopped there waiting for Prabhupada to join it. And I remember getting out of the car, and there was just this, like a scrum, there was a fight. There were about 20 photographers and newspaper people, and they were so aggressive and passionate. They were all trying to get in there and get a photo of Srila Prabhupada getting out the car and going onto the chariot. One woman I saw, she had a camera, and she was swearing at another reporter next to her and hitting him. It was really something. American press. Anyway, so Prabhupada got onto Subhadra's chariot. They had put his Vyasasan underneath the top deck and between the wheels. They didn't want to put Prabhupada up on top because they felt he was too exposed, and they were a little, you know, I wouldn't say anxious, but they were a little cautious that maybe there might be some fanaticism. That year was the first year that this deprogramming business had started. When we were in Los Angeles at the beginning of June, there had actually been a demonstration by some parents and deprogrammers at the front of the temple at the Sunday feast, which Prabhupada didn't see, but it was there. So the devotees were a bit concerned, so they put Prabhupada underneath the deck and between the wheels. And Radha Balaba was at the front, Chandanacharya, he was another one. Myself, I think Tamal Krishna Maharaj, we were sitting on either side of Prabhupada's Vyasasan. And then all the other devotees, you know, they were out doing kirtan. And they had divided up into different groups as we went along. One party would come before Prabhupada and they would chant for 10 or 15 minutes. Then they'd peel off and then another group would come and they would chant like this. It was going all the way down. I found out later that Radha Balaba and Chandanacharya and a few others all had guns underneath their kurtas and chadas just in case. I thought, this is America. I would never have even thought about it, but I guess in America those things go on, you know. So it was just, anyway, amazing. And then we got down to Washington Square Park. There was a crowd, several thousand people there. And there was a little glitch. We got off the chariot. And the devotees somehow or another thought that they were going to get the same Vyasasan that Prabhupada had been sitting on in the parade up onto the stage for Prabhupada to sit on and give his lecture. But somehow or another it got jammed. Prabhupada went up onto the stage and there was nowhere for him to sit. And we had to stand around for 5 or 10 minutes until they managed to get this Vyasasan, you know, off the Rath cart and up onto the stage. Then when we were up there, Prabhupada asked for a glass of water. Nobody had any water. That took another 10 minutes to get some water. Anyway, finally we settled down. Lord Jagannath and Balarama Subhadra at the back. Prabhupada in the front. Prabhupada was looking out over the crowd. And everybody else was looking at Srila Prabhupada. So he gave this very nice talk about the history of Rathiatra. Not long, but, you know, like a synopsis, if you like, of the history of Rathiatra. And then he got down, and we returned to the temple. Prabhupada returned, I returned with him. Everybody else stayed at Washington Square Park for the festivities. And then in the evening, about 8 o'clock in the evening, they all came back to the temple and gave their report. So when we arrived back at the temple, Prabhupada was quite exhausted, and he immediately, it was about 5:30, 6 o'clock, he went to take rest and he had me massage his feet for about an hour whilst he was resting. And then he got up about 7 and went back into his sitting room. Shravanananda came in. Prabhupada sent him to buy a can of 7-Up. That was the one commercial product that Prabhupada sometimes liked to drink, was Up 7, as he called it, or 7-Up. And then, the devotees started coming in and giving their reports. Anyway, so when we got back and Prabhupada laid down and I started massaging his feet, he started laughing. You know, he was lying on the back on his back on the bed, and he started laughing. And he said, I thought there'd be some fanaticism. So I said, what was that, Srila Prabhupada? He said, didn't you see? He said, one man, he was yelling and shouting. He said, and then one very big black man, he came up and bang, he hit him and knocked him into the water. So Prabhupada had seen this from the stage. We were all looking at Prabhupada. I didn't see it. But apparently what happened, I found out years later, what's his name from Chicago, really, really tall, black devotee. Vaninath Vasu. So there was some Christian heckler, Vaninath Vasu. There was some Christian heckler. There had been some Christians going down with the parade. and they had their banners. They had some banners, you know, turn or burn, you know, with a picture of somebody burning in hell because they haven't accepted Jesus. And, you know, various other placards. And one guy, there was like a pond in the park. So he'd gotten up on the wall surrounding the pond so that he could see above. And he was yelling as Prabhupada was giving his lecture. Prabhupada ignored him. But Vaninath Vasu apparently was standing nearby. And he went over and he just, bang, he smacked him in the mouth and knocked him straight into the pond. So Prabhupada had seen this. And when we got back to the temple, it was the first thing that he said. He said, I thought there'd be some fanaticism. And then he told me, I saw the one black man knocked him into the pond and he was laughing like anything. So anyway, that was a tremendous event, the first New York Rath Yatra. And as I say, it was a culmination of Prabhupada's 10 years of preaching in America. It was like a grand finale for everything that he tried to do. That building in 7th Avenue had facility, West 55th Street, had facility for every different kind of program that Prabhupada had planned, you know, for his international society for preaching. Life membership, temple, deity worship, restaurant, theater, dioramas, you know, guest house, everything. It was all there in that one building. So, how long do we go for? Huh? Now is our team. Yes, okay, so there's a lot more, but I guess we'll have to talk about that later on. It's 6:34, so it's time for the arati. Any quick questions or comments? Daneshwar Prabhu. Yeah. Yeah, Daneshwar is asking that his memory was that he thought that Prabhupada had arrived late. But actually, for the Rath Yatra, but it was actually planned. It was all along, it was planned. Prabhupada would not be required to go for the whole parade, and he would just join at 34th Street, which we did. Yes. He's asking, where are all the senior devotees and sannyasis from that time, and why don't they come to Vrindavan? Many of them are still here. And anybody who served Prabhupada, especially during that period, will definitely get some very special mercy. Yeah, I mean, ISKCON as we see it now, of course, is very well organized and set up. There's lots of protocols and standards, and but in those days everything was, you know, just beginning and just growing, and devotees, you know, took a lot of risks and, you know, really did a lot of austerity in helping Srila Prabhupada to set up ISKCON movement. So although some of them are not around anymore for various reasons, of course now we're all getting old. And we're all popping off, as they say, like flies. In another 20 years, you won't find any of them practically here in Vrindavan unless they're in Samadhi. No loss. You know, I think that there's a special kind of mercy that Lord Chaitanya is giving to those devotees that joined up with Srila Prabhupada in the early days and helped him to spread this movement all around the world. It's a special kind of thing. You don't get that opportunity. I mean, it doesn't happen. It only happens once. And so at least if we have any credit at all, it's just that we gave our youth, at least for a few years, to help Srila Prabhupada, establish the Sankirtan movement all around the world. So we're all very grateful for that. And even if somebody has not been able to stick the course fully, it doesn't matter. They'll always have that credit, spiritual credit. And Prabhupada said, you know, if you don't make it, I'll come back and take you home. So we don't have to worry. All right? They'll be back. Yes, again and again. Okay, so we're going to finish there. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. One thing I'll just mention before you rest of you go. Tomorrow in this hall at 12:30, that's at midday, just after midday, we'll be showing a slide presentation of the Bhaktivedanta Research Center, which is a program we've just started in Calcutta 2 years ago. We're collecting and preserving all Vaishnav literature, and we're also finding old manuscripts and photographing them and preserving them. So we'll be showing a slideshow on that Bhaktivedanta Research Center in this hall at 12:30 tomorrow. 12:30 noon.
Tomorrow there will be no katha because we're having the unveiling of Bhaktisiddhanta Prabhu's beautiful bronze panels, which will be Prabhupada bringing two of them. Prabhupada bringing the spiritual world to the material world, and the second one will be that first Rath Yatra down Fifth Avenue in New York. That'll be at 5 o'clock in the Samadhi. If you're Prabhupada's disciple and maybe a sannyasi, you can get into the Samadhi. Otherwise, you have to watch it on the in-house TV and on the projector. Hare Krishna. From the Samadhi Museum. You know, there's a big... I hope he gets it done on time.